Noble Dairy Queen's new summer blizzard menu is back, and it is stacked. Dive right into the summer celebration with their new peanut butter cookie dough party blizzard. You can sink your red spoon into their world-famous DQ soft serve, filled with delicious chunks of chocolate chip cookie dough, swirls of creamy peanut butter topping, and peanut brittle crunch with sprinkles. If the peanut buttery flavor isn't your jam, their fresh take on cobbler a la mode certainly will. Say hello to the Picnic Peach Cobbler Blizzard. You can also let your taste buds crumble with the Ultimate Cookie Blizzard that features Oreo, Chips Ahoy, and Nutter Butter pieces. Dairy Queen knows everyone loves a good comeback, and fan favorite Blizzard flavors Frosted Animal Cookie, Brownie Batter, and Cotton Candy have made their triumphant return. Summer Blizzard flavors are now available at your Noble Dairy Queen stores with locations in Kankakee, Bourbonnais, Moments, and Manteno. Happy tastes good.
People tend to stick to you after time. Places tend to do the same as we do.
Hello and welcome to Kankakee Podcast, where we talk about the people and places of Kankakee County. I'm Jake Lamore, and today's guest was on the podcast, depending on when this is released, it'll be a month or two after the fact, but she was on before with the Kankakee Public Library talking about the behind the scenes of the Barack Obama TikTok. But now she's back, and we're talking specifically today about her, because when I first met her, I thought she was one of the coolest people I'd ever met in the Kankakee area. And I thought it was time that she came on the podcast to share just her story individually. So we're welcoming back Celia Carr, or Lady G. You have many, you wear many hats.
Yes.
And you have many accessories, whether it's a microphone or a library book or, you know.
Phone for a TikTok.
Phone for a TikTok.
A camera for filming. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. All the above. Right. And that was another reason I wanted to have you on, just to talk about you, because I just saw all of these layers and I was like, we got to learn about Lady G. We got to learn about Celia and all that stuff. Where does life start for you? Are you originally from Kankakee, or?
What's crazy is I just discovered in a way that I am from Kankakee. So when I was born, so back in 1992, no.
Back in my day.
Exactly. But, which actually seems like a long time for me.
You know.
But I'm not even going to go down that
road. Yeah, it's starting to feel.
Like
no,
now
it
I have
is.
To I'm, scroll for my birthday year, like so much now.
We're not in that century anymore.
No,
we're not
we're
in the
not.
19. Of course, you know, I hear you. I was born in 90, so, you know, I feel you.
It's tough. But yeah. but I found out that when I was, the day I was born, my parents lived in University Park. So my childhood was kind of in University Park, but they drove to Kankakee to have me and then drove back home. So by the time I was about five, we moved to Kankakee.
Okay.
So I started school in Kankakee County.
Okay. So you were born at one of the Kankakee hospitals.
Riverside.
Whoop! And the place hasn't been the same since.
You know, I did. My mom and dad did have a police escort when I, on the way here.
Wow.
So I came in with a bang, and I'll be leaving with a bang, I'm sure.
Making
sure.
Notes.
Yes.
Police escort.
Yes, that is my favorite story. My mom tells me it every year on my birthday.
Well, now I got to hear this story then. This sounds epic. I mean, you had a police escort?
A police escort. For,
to it's, be, what happened?
So my mom, I guess she misconstrued the labor, you know, like the contractions.
Okay.
So my mom was like, I'm having this baby at Riverside because I want Dr. Rama, who is still my doctor to this day.
Oh, that's awesome.
And, you know, they get in the car, they drive to Kankakee, and I was almost born in the car. They're speeding, and they get pulled over. And Luckily, it was a cop that knew my dad and my mom.
Oh,
and he was like, "Oh, she's having the baby. Let's go!" So he gave her an escort to Kankakee.
That's awesome. So, that's great.
The world knew I was coming.
Yeah, the world literally knew. They knew, especially with the police escort. People are driving by and they're like, exactly. "Oh, that must be Celia. She's coming." Change is coming.
Right. Exactly. That's what I'm here for. I'm here for change. Yes.
That's great. Yeah, that's like classic. So you turn five, you're starting to go to preschool and things like that. You and your family, your parents move to Kankakee. Mm-hmm. Did you have any siblings?
Yes, there are six of us total.
Oh, wow.
So I'm number three. I'm the middle child.
Okay.
Somewhat middle child out of six.
This is all starting to add up now. You're the middle child. You had to have a police escort. Yeah.
I'm a Pisces.
You're a Pisces.
Yes.
This is all making sense. Son.
Exactly. It makes up Celia. So there you go. But yeah, it's I have five other siblings. I have two older brothers and then one brother right after me, and then a little sister and then a baby brother who's 10 years younger than me. My baby brother is.
Okay.
So it was a busy household.
Yeah.
it was a busy household. Yeah.
So growing up in Kankakee for you then, what comes to your mind?
Ooh.
What are your memories?
And this is crazy because one of my programs through the library actually was created because of a nostalgic memory from my childhood. Kickball was a memory for me in Kankakee. We used to live on Fairmont in Kankakee by Pleasant Grove. And in between Pleasant Grove and our house was this big field. And me and my siblings it was enough of us to either do basketball, football. But the crazy thing is, I was only girl for 5 years. I was the only girl. And it was three brothers and me. Whenever they needed somebody else for like football, basketball, I would have to break that. You know,
you were elected.
I was
whether you liked it or not.
Whether I liked it or not. I was playing basketball at one point. I was sometimes playing flag football with them at one point.
You're like, guys, I just want to play with my Barbies. I don't want to play football.
You know, they roughed me up.
Or maybe you liked it. I don't know.
I did because they used to always have these little boy meetings and put on their doors like no girls allowed because they couldn't spell aloud. So they would put no girls allowed. So sometimes I felt like, okay, they're including me. Like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to, you know, if I got to get a grass stain, that's okay. I'm going to act like I'm not hurt. If they tackle me too hard, it's okay. I'm going to, you know, I want to make the cut this time. Because I want to be a part of those meetings that y'all having. What y'all talking about? what does this have to do?
Makes me think of Little Rascals.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. But so kickball was definitely something that we used to do together. And then whenever we would play, like during the summertime, Pleasant Grove, whenever they had like some type of youth event or vacation Bible school or something like that, and the kids would come outside. Sometimes they would join us. Sometimes after church, they would join us and just play with us, and we would play a game of kickball. So whenever, you know, people were walking past and they saw us playing kickball, they joined us. It was always a game that brought just kids together. And that was around the time, like we said, we were born in the 90s, like, then, like early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s, like it was okay and it was fun to play with just the community, you know? So, kickball originated because I wanted to bring that back. I wanted to bring back that fun of being outside because we used to be outside. I'm gonna tell you, like, growing up in Kankakee too, and I know a lot of people can attest to this, but once we were outside, we had to stay outside. There was no running in and out.
Yeah.
There is no letting the cool air outside, letting all my good air out. There's none running in and out for some water, drinking from the water hose, stuff like that. So those were fun times, though. And I wanted to kind of bring that back in the way that I felt it was okay for us to do it as kids and as kickball. So
I went to one of those community kickball events.
Yeah.
And I've been wanting to go back since. And I know you had one recently, right? You do it two or three or four times throughout the warmer months, of course, can't do it.
Right. And we try to do it as often as we can. So the events that I would put on for the library, I would try to do it at least once a month. especially during the summertime when we have most of the kids' attention. So we did just recently have one, and I have to keep telling Mayor Curtis, I'm sorry. I am sorry. We got injured at the last kickball.
No. Yes. Did Mayor Curtis get injured or someone else?
He got injured too. Like, and the thing is, we weren't even supposed to play. Like, I did not go with the intentions of playing because the last kickball game was the water slide kickball. It was all water. It was a water kickball game.
That sounds really dangerous. So now it makes sense on why people got injured. Because how do you incorporate a water slide into kickball? Do you put the water slide at like the home plate and then you just slide into the ball or what?
So for each base, it's a little kiddie pool that we have to get in. But on the way to the base, there's a what is it? It's something that's laid out for us to be able to slide on. And the person put Johnny, who is the violence prevention director, she put baby oil and dish liquid on it with water. And we have to run on that and land in the kiddie pool to say that we're on base.
That is a daunting task.
And that is in every base. We had to slide to every. We didn't have to slide. We were supposed to run, but we slid.
Yeah.
30 and up, that's a dangerous game.
It is. Like, as we're sitting here and you're describing this to me, I can already feel like the bruises on my hips,
man.
And my legs.
So many
all the
bruises,
sliding.
So many aches. So I think Brian might have footage of me sliding into third. Now, I didn't slide on purpose. My plan was to run carefully to third. I slipped and fell and hit my head, like, hard on the ground. And I still tried to crawl my way to third, and I got out. Like, I did all of that and still
got out.
Got out. So,
in my mind, there's no way you can run across the liquid dish soap and what did you say, baby oil?
Yes.
Yeah, that's not happening. You're sliding whether you want to or not.
Right. So I'm telling myself I'm not gonna play. I'm just gonna pitch this kickball game. It gets so intense, as you know.
Yes.
Like, these games get so intense.
Yes.
That it's fun.
It was a lot of fun.
But
yeah,
when I saw that, I was like, okay, I'll try it. And then peer pressure from the teams. You know,
yes.
Peer pressure. I did it, and I should not have done it because I had a headache for at least almost 48 hours. I had to go to urgent care to make sure I did not have a concussion.
Oh, my
That's
gosh.
How hard I feel.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, after that, I stopped playing. I didn't play anymore after that. After
maybe no more water slide kickball.
Yeah.
Might have to rethink.
I might.
Maybe for the fall, it could be like corn or something, you know, like incorporate the fall
and the harvest theme
of
kickball.
Yeah.
That's actually corn and pumpkins, maybe like
a maze in between bases.
A maze in between bases. I like that, Luke. Yeah.
You know,
or like, instead of a pool of water, it's a pool of corn.
Corn or pumpkin mush.
Or pumpkin mush.
There you go.
I like that. I like where this is going.
My job will watch this and be like, no. No. No, Celia. I'm always the one with the big ideas. And I usually have to go to Mary in order to, like, talk me down. Because my police escort, I get it honest, you know? I can't help it. So that's where that come from.
That's great. So, you know, I guess fast forwarding a little bit, you know, childhood, playing kickball mm-hmm. in the community. You end up, your whole childhood was spent here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even
right.
High school. Did you go to Kankakee High School? Okay.
We moved my eighth grade year, right before my eighth grade year. So I ended up going to Bourbonnais Upper Grade Bug in Bourbonnais. And then after that, went to BBCHS. Proud Boilermaker here. I don't know what that is, so don't ask me. But I am proud.
Boiler up, whatever
there,
that
there you
means.
Go. Boiler up. Stay boilered up. I don't know, but stay it, I guess.
So what'd you do after... or actually, kind of getting into the music portion of mm-hmm. your life, did that start for you at a young age, or does that come later?
In a world of taco, so-so, Taco John's believes you deserve better. Better tacos, better burritos, better everything. You deserve 100% North American beef and crispy taco shells cooked in-house every day for peak freshness. Better sauces, hand-cut sirloin steak, and our world-famous potato olays served hot and crispy every time. Luckily for you, better is what we do. Come taste what we're about at Taco John's. Bigger, bolder, better. Download our app, earn free food. Taco John's Valueist menu always gives you the most bang for your buck. For a limited time, get our new Beefy Tostada with perfectly seasoned 100% North American beef for $3. Or our savory new refried bean tostada for just $2. With layers of cheddar, house-made pico de gallo, and queso fresco all atop a crispy tostada shell. Mmm. It's also a lot of bang for your bite. New tostadas are here for a limited time. Only at Taco John's. Bigger, bolder, better.
Well, the pressure was high already because my dad is very, very musically inclined. He was very well known in Kankakee because he was a great drummer. He plays a saxophone very, very well. To this day, he still does. He can hear a song and learn it within seconds on his saxophone. So he plays the keyboard and a few other things I'm sure I'm missing.
So he's very well versed.
Very, very well diverse. He's very versatile in his music as well. So my mom also is very musically inclined. She sings. So growing up in the musical household, and not just my mom, my aunts, my cousins. I have a cousin right now who plays bass for Jasmine Sullivan. So, and then another cousin who just signed a record deal, I think about a year ago, and is making gospel music right now.
That's
so
awesome.
And then another cousin who sings behind, she used to sing behind Music Soul Child. Right now, there's a gospel artist named Anthony Brown. She sings with his group. So, and then my brother is also very musically inclined as well. All of my siblings are.
So it's just in your DNA.
It's in my DNA.
You were born into it.
Born into it. Had no choice.
Do your parents do that? Have they done music professionally, or was that just a hobby for them?
It was more of a hobby. So my dad with his saxophone, I'm the type of person that I think big, and I really like to encourage people. I really do. Like, I believe you can do anything if you put your mind to it. It sounds like cliche and maybe juvenile, but I really do believe that. At 31, I believe that with every core in me, I believe it.
I don't think that sounds juvenile. I think
that's
great. It's great at 31 you mm-hmm. still have that
yes.
same mindset, because usually you get to this point, or a lot of, I guess, stereotypically adults
right.
get to that point and their childhood dreams, they're just like, no.
Right.
I'm not going to follow those. That's
right.
stupid.
Exactly.
That's silly.
Exactly.
And
so
they don't encourage
mm-hmm.
others. So, mm-hmm. Not all the time, but
mm-hmm. right.
I guess that's what they project in the movies, right?
Exactly. In movies, yeah. When parents don't understand the kids following their dreams, they definitely project that parents are mean and grumpy about why they didn't get to pursue their dreams. So,
yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great thing that you still
yes.
have that.
I do.
In your 30s.
And I appreciate that about me, too.
Yeah.
I really do.
Absolutely.
So my dad actually has a few, I think he has maybe two or three albums, Christmas albums, with him playing his saxophone. My mom has not done it professionally. One of my brothers, I think, is actively pursuing that professionally. My other brother, who's actually really a music engineer, he creates instrumentals and stuff. The song that I performed at Music Fest, he made the beat for it. Just for me, he came to town, because they all don't live here anymore. He came to town and had some type of, I think it was like a, I forget what he called it. It was like an opportunity for artists to be able to come and create beats with him.
Oh, cool.
For like 24 hours.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I went in support of him. And I stayed late, and I was like, so when you going to make me a beat?
Yeah, hey, I'm your sister.
Right.
When you
going to
make me one?
I'm your big sister. It's my turn.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
So.
Listen to me, or
or I'm going to knock all this stuff on the floor.
Yeah, I'm going to give a big welt on your on the side of your arm, side of your
right.
face.
So, and also, we really dove into music because my dad was a pastor as well. So when it came to instruments, like my oldest brother played the drums. My second oldest brother sang. My third brother, which is the one that makes the beats now, he learned and taught himself how to play the keyboard, the piano. And then I sang with my other brother and my sister, and now my baby brother sings as well. So we're all, we could have been in Jackson 6.
You could, yeah, I was literally just thinking that.
Yeah, and we were our own band. Mm-hmm. So rehearsals, and we actually, what's funny is too, a lot of people do not know this. A few people that, you know, would go to our church kind of knew. But
and what was the church? Was it a local church or was
it was
he
a local
pastor?
Church. Okay. He was a pastor here. It was Total Restoration Christian Center at first. And then it became Total Restoration Church of the Nazarene a few years later. But what's funny is myself, my second oldest brother, Jeremiah, and then my sister, Lauren, we were mimes during, for church. Like, we would dance. It's kind of like praise dance. We would dance to music. And we were traveling doing this, too. We were pretty good, if I must, you know, toot my own horn.
Wow.
Our horn. We were pretty good.
That's
cool. We traveled.
Cool.
I think we were one of the first mimes in Kankakee.
Mime groups. Yeah.
So that's, as I think about it, my past is pretty different.
Yeah.
You know, it's different.
That's awesome, though.
Yeah.
It's very unique, but I love that, mm-hmm. you know. And so, you know, what instruments then, I can't remember, did you even say, what instruments did you play then? In high school?
Yeah, we did not say.
No, I didn't. I was like, I don't think so. No,
we
I don't
did
remember.
Not.
Yeah.
Well, I don't really give off this type of vibe, but I was a flautist. I played the flute.
Yeah. Okay.
I called it.
Luke totally called
he
that.
He called it. Hey, yeah. You know, but that was.
I was thinking maybe flute or clarinet. But
really?
Yeah. Actually, I was thinking clarinet or saxophone.
I've
because
gotten that
your
before.
Father yeah. was saxophonist.
Yeah,
so
I've
I thought maybe.
Before.
Yeah.
What's funny is I definitely wanted to play the clarinet. I had, like, my mind was set on that. So all of us, of course, were in band. All of us. My sister ended up was the only one. Well, my brother, too. But she ended up being in jazz band and in jazz choir or something like that. Concert choir. I don't remember what it's called. She was in choir. But I originally wanted to play the clarinet. And my mom convinced me to play the flute. She was like, no, a lot of people are playing the clarinet. Why don't you just play the flute? So here I am, like, I don't want to disagree. I'm like, okay, I'll play the flute, Mom. Ask me, did I like it?
You didn't like
Hated
it.
Hated it.
Yep, that's usually how that goes. When the parent, not always, but when the parent chooses the instrument for the child, mm-hmm. they usually are mm-hmm. just like, yeah,
I'm not doing this. I did not like it.
One
year when I thought I was liking it, I think I quit band 1 year and that was my sophomore year. But then I was back in band my junior year. And
did you have
year,
Bill Dyke, by the way?
I did, Mr. Dyke.
Yeah,
I
Mr. Dyke.
Him.
Okay. Shout out to
him.
You can listen to his episode of Kankakee Podcast. Too.
He was on your
when he retired from being an instructor. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had him on the show and you know.
He probably
was fun.
Got some choice things to say about me.
No, he didn't say anything
hey,
bad
Dyke.
About you. No, he told some interesting stories, but no, nothing about. He didn't say, and that's Celia. Let me tell you, if you ever meet her, stay at least 20
right.
feet away or
right.
farther.
No, but he was great. He was. He made band fun. My first year. When did I? Because I had Mr. Lehman at one point as well. But I did not do band my sophomore year. My junior year, I did. And we used to do. Were you in band? Were you a band kid?
I was in band, but only in junior high.
Okay.
I didn't do it in high school.
So are you familiar with like the chair concept?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
So
first chair, second chair.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we
did those in junior high for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we did too. So my junior year, my junior year, Came back to band, thought I was going to get in there and kill it with this flute.
You're like, I'm going to be first chair.
But what's crazy is I ended up being second chair.
Okay, well, second chair's still good.
My cousin slash best friend at the time was first chair. I was second chair. Ask me where I was by the end of that week.
First chair.
Second to last.
Oh, wow. What happened? What did you do?
I got challenged. A lot of people challenged me. And I let them, some challenges I didn't even show up to because I'm like, I don't feel like, I don't want to prove that I'm worth standing the second chair. Y'all can have it. Like, at this point, I proved to myself that it's possible.
Okay.
I can get up
there. So you were satisfied getting to second chair that one time. You're like, okay, I know I can do it.
Bucket
whatever.
List, check.
But yeah, and you're done.
I'm done. Yeah. Okay. Listen, y'all can have it.
I get it.
Take it.
I get it.
It felt good. I warmed it up for y'all. It felt good.
Like, the chair is nice and warm.
It's nice and warm. But I'm not a competitive person. I really am not.
Like, I've never been really either.
I compete with myself.
Yes.
So I can't, you know, if anyone wants to challenge me in anything, I'm be like, you can have it. Like,
yeah.
I know I'm good, but we might be different. So
yes.
You can have it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's hilarious, though. Yeah. That's still, I forgot about those chair
Cheers.
Battles, man. I remember having some serious chair battles between myself and, because I was always, like, I think I was usually second or third chair in the trumpet mm-hmm. section. I don't know if I ever got to first chair.
I was going to say either you play the trombone.
Saturdays were made for creating, and Little Me's studio on South Main Street in Bourbonnais gets that, so that's why they have open studios Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's where your kids can drop in unannounced, practically. No registration is needed. You can pay at the door, and this is for kids 1.5 years old to 12 years old. And what you do is you drop in, you pick a project, and you let the creativity begin. Now, some of those activities include pre-sketched canvas painting, slime making, who doesn't love making slime, friendship bracelets, tote bag design, preschool art stations, and more. This happens most Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Make sure you bring the kids 45 minutes before closing to make sure they have plenty of time to create. Little Me Studio at 441 South Main Street in Bourbonnais. Across from Olivet Nazarene University, if you have any questions or you want more information, you can always call or text 815-507-2051 or follow Little Me Studio on Facebook and Instagram at Little Me Studio. Man, you know
or
me.
Or the trumpet.
Yeah, you got me.
You
I was a trumpet player. Yeah.
You look like a trumpet player.
Yeah.
You do.
I don't think I ever made it to first chair, but not that I can remember, but I remember being second and third. Mm-hmm. Usually somewhere in there because sometimes I would lose a battle here and there. But it was always a fun competition. It wasn't like cutthroat.
Yeah. You know?
It was always a fun thing. We all got along pretty well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So, you know, are you doing, besides band, when did you start writing your own material then? Was that during that time or was it after high school that?
No.
When did that strike you?
I didn't even realize I was capable of writing music in high school. I was going to say I was a typical teenager, but I was not. I was pretty different. And one thing about me, I love to make people laugh. I do not wish to be a comedian because I don't want to be booed off the stage. Some people think I'm funny. Some people don't. So, you know, I don't want to meet those people that don't because I don't want to be booed off the stage.
So you were the class clown then, or
I mean,
not quite.
So how many people watch? Because I want to lie, but if any teachers that know me or anybody from my past, well then yes, I was
okay.
Pretty much.
All right.
Pretty
yeah.
much.
It's okay.
It is.
Yeah, it's
but,
okay.
I mean, sometimes it was too disturbing in classes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's what kept me going every day.
I don't know if it was like this for you, but for me. There were certain classes that I was in where I felt a little more comfortable than
yes.
others.
Yeah.
So I would maybe be a little more vocal and maybe a little more silly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And maybe considered a class clown, but just in a certain
right.
class. Like
right.
maybe it was band,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And so maybe it was that kind of like for you, like certain classes you felt like you could express yourself a little more, or was it just all around you were just...
I think it was a little bit of both, only because certain classes where I was comfortable in, I did my work, I was, you know, like you said, a little bit more vocal about what was being taught in class. Classes that I did not understand too much, I was very vocal and funny. Because let's distract you.
I understand this, so we're just...
Yeah, we're just going to... Let's distract you from teaching and let me tell a joke. Like, why do we have to worry about this? I am not going to have to deal with X squared plus Y equals Z in my adult years. Let's tell a joke.
Yeah.
Let's have fun.
Yep.
Let me mess with somebody. That was pretty much where I was. But I think it's a little bit of both for me. Where at the time, I didn't realize that I was not understanding, so I was kind of like shifting a little bit.
So is that... Your comment about not being the typical teenager, is that what you're talking about? Or what, when you say that you weren't the typical teenager, what does that mean?
Well, I, being who I was at school was not who I was at home. So I was able to, I felt like I could be more of myself at school than I could at home. Because again, with my parents, and not just my parents, but my grandparents were also pastors, and we ended up going to their church at one point in time, and that was all in Chicago. It was a Baptist church. Very, very strict church. But my childhood, all the way up until I graduated high school, was very religious. Very religious. So I felt like I had to be a certain way, especially at home and at church. Because even at one point when my dad started his church, my... it was either my junior year or my senior year. I ended up being the youth leader at my dad's church. I really do have a heart and passion for youth, teens, always have. And I feel like I can relate in some ways. I don't think I know everything when it comes to them, because I don't. But I feel like we both can have teachable moments. They can and we can as well. But I felt like it was a lot of pressure for me to be something that I maybe didn't know if I wanted to be. So in certain ways, I wouldn't say acted out, but I acted based upon the peer pressure. In certain ways, I was who I needed to be at home and in the church. But in many other ways, I wasn't who I needed to be for me. So it was a lot of back and forth for me. It was a lot of shifting. It was a lot of trying to figure out where I need to be, because I was also a people pleaser as well. So that was very, very hard for me. So I have moments where, like, I discovered that I might be attracted to women. And because of my religious background, I couldn't be attracted to women. So at school, I could be one way. At home, I can't.
Yeah.
You know? So.
That still must have been tough at school, though, because if word got back to your family that you were acting a certain way, like... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hey, she's showing interest in women at school. Mm-hmm. You might want to...
Right.
Yeah.
And what's crazy is I learned how to... The term back then was sneak.
Yes.
But I learned how to cover it up in a lot of ways. I was very, very tomboyish. I love shoes to this day. I love shoes. Like I remember working for Pathfinder, and Brian and them would always look at my shoes when I would walk in, because I was always matching, and still do to this day, I'm always matching with my shoes.
Yeah. You know, they say that's a female stereotype, but I know men that love their shoes just as much as women do. So
yes, it's
I will point that out there.
Exactly. It's definitely not a female thing. Like,
yeah.
If you have the right type of shoe, you would catch my attention.
Yes. Yeah.
And I'm not talking about heels and all of that. I'm talking about
any
J's
type of shoes.
And,
type of
Nikes.
Shoes. If they're matching your outfit, really what.
Yeah. You got my attention. Like, oh, what you got on? It's nice. What size you wear? Okay. Yeah.
I might steal those later.
Hint the what size you wear. Yeah. We wear the same size. That's great. But I learned how to cover it up. I did. So I didn't go too far for people to see or even think. A lot of people, especially now that I talk to, some people that I went to school with, they're like, we knew you like girls. I'm like, you never knew, because I never said it. But my actions or maybe my mannerisms did tell. Because, again, I was very tomboyish. The way I dressed, the way I spoke, the way I carried myself, things like that. But it became easy, but it was very, very frustrating to cover up. Because it's like, it's this part of me that I can't control. You know what I'm saying? And now I have to figure out how to control it.
Well, and you're living almost two identities. You're living two different identities. Exactly. You're having to cover up the one that you truly feel like you are. Right. And then you have to play this other role too,
right.
which isn't completely false, but you know, a big part of it, you're masking for your family or your father's congregation or whoever else is involved in that.
Yeah. And I, in ways, again, like I said, I was a people pleaser. So in ways, I felt like I was protecting them. And not just in protecting them, I was protecting myself. So I felt like I had an obligation to keep quiet, go through that on my own. And yeah, that was hard.
What was the process like for changing that? Was it a gradual one or was it one that just... Was it like TNT setting off and
it was multiple TNTs. It was gradual. It was a lot. It was a lot. I decided to not come out to my parents or not express it. In a lot of ways, they did not know, but they knew. And it didn't blow up when they found out. But the way things were handled, now, I mean, again, it was back then. Now, 2023 is very progressive. It's very, you know, becoming accepting and things like that, open. But back in the early 2000s, like, I graduated 2010. So maybe, like, 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, I was really, really going through it with this.
You're going through puberty.
Yeah, exactly. You know. Exactly. So ways that it was handled back then, especially being in a religious church, was difficult. It wasn't how I would handle it to this day, but it was hard for me because I literally was stripped from everything. Could not see anybody, could not talk to anybody, because just being who I was wrong. Because that's what the Bible says, that's what God says, that's what the church's belief is. We can't be that way, you know. So, it grew and became tough, especially in the years of going through puberty, and then after high school. I'm trying to figure out what I want. So at one point, I'm looking different. I'm looking like the young lady that I'm supposed to look like. And then when I'm really going through it, I don't. I look like what I want to look like, you know. But in the midst of it, like, it kind of made me who I am today, which I'm proud of because I'm not ashamed to say who I am. I'm not ashamed to be. And I don't have to walk around saying all the time. I'm just me. And if anybody ever asks, I'm very protective of that side of me. So if anybody ever asks, I might tell them. I might tell them my business. It depends on who you are.
Yeah. But, did you just decide to finally have that conversation with your parents? Or did they approach you?
They approached me. And when they approached me, I was like, well, I guess it's time to talk. I guess now is it. They approached me about it. They found some text messages. Again, this was around the time texting was not very popular. It was becoming
It was popular. Right. It was still new.
It was still newer. New. Right. Yeah. And we had to, you know, it was when we had to pay for each text message we received.
I remember those days. I had a prepay phone and it was so much cents or whatever it was per text sending and receiving.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So we Minutes were free after 9 p.m. on weekends.
I was literally just talking about this on the podcast the other day. I was talking about after 9 p.m., like on weeknights and then weekends. You have free phone calls or unlimited texting.
Exactly. Unlimited text, all of that.
And your phone was probably tied to like your parents' plan or something, right?
Yeah.
So that's how they found these text messages, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, after that, I would tell my friends, don't text me or call me until after 9 o'clock. I can't even open it. If you send it before 9, I'm not opening it because I don't trust it. Like, call me after 9 o'clock. But that was when curfew, we had to turn our phones off and give them to our parents at 10. So I only get an hour through the weeknights. Right. And then the weekends, we would have our phones, of course. But, yeah, they approached me about it, and they asked me about it. I actually have a TikTok of telling my story a little bit. I started doing it, and I kind of in the middle of it got discouraged and stopped it because I felt like I was hurting people in telling my story. Mm. Because, again, how my parents handled it was not really, you know, it wasn't the best at the time.
Obviously, their reaction wasn't good, but what did they say at that point? At that point, were they accepting of it, or was it like you need to can this?
Mm-hmm. It was more of that. It was not. I wouldn't say it wasn't up for discussion, but it wasn't up for discussion. When they asked me about it, they was like, "So you're liking girls?" And I'm like, "I don't know." And again, at this time, I did not know. I really didn't, because I'm, you know, sometimes I'm liking guys, sometimes I'm liking girls, and then it's like, I don't know, but I like girls more than I like guys. So when they asked and I told them I didn't know, they thought I was just afraid to say yes.
Well, you probably were, right?
I was, but I also didn't want to make that commitment at that time to say, yeah, I'm only like, yeah, I like girls. I didn't, because at the time I was still open to, you know, like dating guys or whatever. But because of how strict the household was, I couldn't even really date guys like that. So it was hard for me to be able to determine, like, okay, well, can I like guys? I know I can't like girls. So who am I supposed to marry? What am I supposed to do?
How does this work?
How does this work? Like, how do we court?
Because you're a people pleaser. You want to please your family.
Right.
So what ended up happening between you and your, did you come to a point where you're just like, this is it. I've had enough.
I did. And that wasn't until I had my little rounds of like dating females, whatever, and I kept getting caught dating.
So you just went ahead anyway.
Just went ahead anyway
and continued the dual lifestyle.
At one point, I did try, especially after the first time we had that conversation, and you know, we went through what we went through. Again, very, very, very religious home. Very religious home. But I did try my best to be who I needed to be for the church and for the youth. I really did. It didn't end up how I wouldn't even say how I thought it would. I knew it wouldn't end up how I wanted it to. But it came to a point where after I ended up getting caught with the last female that I talked to, I ended up telling myself, and I remember it was the day of my one of my older cousins' wedding. Again, like how they handled these situations were not right. But we used to have to sit and meet with the parents of the girl that I was talking to and talk about the relationship, talk about why it's wrong and stuff like that. It was so embarrassing. It was tough. It was very tough. And then a few times I had to stand in front of the church and tell the church, like, I didn't have to tell them specifically what it was, but I did have to tell them that I was being seated because, I've done some things that I knew I should not have done. So now I have to be seated in the church. I couldn't be a youth leader for a while. I was given like sermons to preach on when it came to like lust, perversion, things like that. Very traumatizing. Very traumatizing.
Yeah. What did that do to your mental health?
Man.
And just overall.
Yeah, that destroyed it. I went through, I didn't even realize that I was going through these things because, again, being raised in a religious home, you don't acknowledge mental health. You don't acknowledge the fact that, you know, that's what's going on emotionally and mentally. It's always spiritually.
It's always God.
It's always God. So the spirit man was way more important than my physical being. And we always had to look at things from the spiritual eye perspective rather than we are humans. We have desires and wants and needs. But those desires and wants and needs was the flesh, which was not of God, or of the world, which was not of God. So it really messed with my mental a lot, to the point where I finally was like, you know what? I'm 19 years old. I don't want to keep going through this. Well, I think I was 18 at the time. I don't want to keep going through this. I want to be able to, like, date freely. I want to be able to be free. I want to be able to, you know what I'm saying? Like, I want to experience happiness. So I decided that, you know what, from this day forth, I'm going to just see what it is like to date men. Go ahead and date men. And like 6 months later, I ended up meeting my kid's dad, and we got married. And throughout our marriage, like, I'm like, I have to keep this testimony going. Because at one point, I became a testimony as well. So I would have to stand up and testify, is what they call it, about how I've been delivered from being gay to now being straight.
Oh, my gosh. Then being, you're kidding.
Nope. Then getting married to a man. Then having kids. So all the pressure for so many years of continuing this testimony of why I've turned away from homosexuality. So, yeah, that was my childhood. That was my, yeah, yep.
Obviously, I can't imagine mm-hmm. what that would be like.
Mm-hmm.
And through that whole being a testimony time, mm-hmm. you're still living I wouldn't say a lie because it wasn't completely false.
Right.
But at the same time, you're like, well, this isn't really who I am still.
Right.
You know.
And that was tough because now, you know, I'm married.
So you felt really cornered at that point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then especially with parents who, again, are very, you know, religious and into the whole church aspect and everything and changing lives because they've even, my parents have actually also helped marriages be restored, which is why it was called Total Restoration. They've helped a lot of people. Like, a lot of people that I come across today still ask me, you know, how your parents and still with my husband, things like that, which wasn't always false.
Yeah, it's not all bad.
Right.
You know,
right.
But I would imagine, so when you decided to date men and then eventually marry a man and mm-hmm. go through that, was that something you personally wanted to try, or was it part of that family and church influence, or maybe it was a little bit of both?
Both.
Okay. So you really just, you're like, well, I need to try this to really see if this is mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. how I feel.
Yeah. And I met my kid's dad, and he was what could have, like, that relationship should have turned into like a friendship. You know what I'm saying? Like it could have been, because he was a great guy. He was funny. He reminded me of my family, my siblings, and my dad. Like, we understood each other's, like, laugh language, comedy, stuff like that. So I'm in the midst of going through that, I'm like, but I gotta stay on this straight, narrow path. I cannot waver. Like, I like him a lot. He likes me. Why not? Why not try it? So we ended up trying it, you know, and I had to come to a conclusion for myself in the marriage that this is not it.
So you're going through this and you're still thinking about women mm-hmm. and being with women, and you didn't feel the call to be with a man.
No. And from time to time, it's like they teach you how to pray it away. They teach you how to, like, cast it down, or that's the enemy playing tricks with you, stuff like that. So I'm using that and saying, and still trying to be that wife that the Bible talks about, still trying to be that praying wife, that loving wife, the wife that makes his dinner when he comes home from work, the wife that has a house clean. Because I was a stay-at-home mom. I had two kids at the time and then got pregnant again and was pregnant with twins. So that lifestyle, and that was also how my mom was. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. So I tried to mirror who I was off of her because I thought that was the only way. I saw her do it, and I had my parents on this high pedestal. Like, they are the closest people to God that I know because I've seen their life in and out of the church. And to me, it looked like they were living what the Bible said to do. So I'm like, it's not impossible. You know, I know my parents have had struggles and desires and stuff like that, but if they can come together and, you know, make things work, then it's not impossible. So I tried to do what my mom did. My mom used to make meals from scratch, and she can still cook her butt off to this day. Oh my God. That's why I love to eat.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah.
Like I tried to be that for my kids, but I'm like, that wasn't my calling. That wasn't for me. That wasn't. So I'm not that I'm thinking about women and like, oh, I want to be with women. But it was more of, I'm having these thoughts again. I got to pray. I got to fast. I got to get rid of this. I got to pray it away. And years go past and I'm not thinking about it. I'm not struggling anymore because I'm keeping myself reading my Bible and stuff like that. But still on, like, in the back of my head, it's still there. I had to watch my mannerisms. I had to watch what I wore. I had to watch how I carried myself because I would get questions sometimes, like from my dad. And I would be like, well, no, I'm okay. You know, I'm all right. Knowing that it's in me.
Deep down.
It's in me.
It's there.
It's in me.
So what was the, I guess you could say, breaking point or coming out point for you?
When I got tired of trying to please people. It was literally just me being tired of trying to hold on to something because somebody wants me to. My marriage was not a good marriage. And like, that's as much as I'm gonna give about that.
Oh yeah. Well, you don't have to.
Yeah. it wasn't what. And it's funny because a lot of people that I come across, especially guys, it's very funny because they're like, well, if you was married to me, you wouldn't like girls. What kind of mess? What kind of... Your ego is horrible. Like,
I was going to say, wow. Man, they must really like themselves.
Man, like, jeez. It's well, not even about that.
Celia, it's because they're ruining humanity for you.
There you go. Exactly. Like, that's, you know... But I would laugh at it and ask them, like, what got you on the ego stroke this morning?
Right, that mentality always cracked me up. I'm like, wow, okay.
Very egotistical.
Yes,
that is,
yeah.
What?
Mm-hmm.
But, I literally, like, I was going through a rough time in my marriage, and it was coming to an end. And I just told myself, you know what, at this point, I'm tired of pleasing people. I need to figure out what Celia wants. I need to figure out what works best for Celia. And all of this while having kids. You know, I feel like I was bombarded at one point with my family because they knew that I was going through this again. And I wasn't loud with it, but I was loud with it, if that makes sense. So I stopped going to church, my parents' church at one point, because I needed to figure out and I needed to hear me for once. And that's how I got loud with it to them. When I stopped going to their church, things happened with that. My business got put out and I ended up having to leave and ended up staying. I was homeless for a little while. I ended up staying in a hotel for a little while with my kids. And that's where the library came into play. Like, the library saved my life. The people in the library saved my life. They didn't even really know all of what was going on. They just knew someone right. Like, I had just gotten a job and I didn't show up. One day, and I had to text my new supervisor and tell her, hey, just having an emergency right now. I cannot make it to work. Is that okay? And she said, yeah, that's fine. So at one point, I kind of was able to talk to her about some things that was going on. She didn't hold it over my head. Like, she, this lady, Camille Rose, she really, really helped me in the time that I needed it. And then the youth service staff, they came together and put money together for me. And it was a lot. It was life changing, And like when you said, was it a TNT thing? Was it graduate? It was all of it.
It was all of it, man. It was everything. From hearing it, sounds like there was a couple TNT moments and then some gradual moments as well. So that was, what, 2019 then when you started working at the library, right? Yeah. So this is all, it's 2023 now.
Four, almost 5 years from now. Yep.
Wow.
Still kind of new, but because of the pandemic, it's a blur. It seems like it was 10 years ago when it was not. But it was very scary. But I'm proud of myself because, like, look where I am today. You know, I made it through it. I made a career of my job. I ended up being promoted in about 6 months of working there. And they said that's a record. Again, the police escort. I'm telling y'all, it all started there.
Start off on a high note.
And I'm telling you, I came in with a bang. I'm gonna leave with a bang. You know, no time soon. I don't plan on leaving no time.
No,
soon.
I hope not.
But I do. You know, I did want to take a moment to thank the people at the library because I am gonna put this out there as well. I put in my letter of resignation a week ago for the library.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
No.
I did.
Oh, man.
I did. I've told enough people that I'm, like, really close to.
Yeah.
And they didn't believe me, which is funny.
Mm-hmm.
Because people know, and I think you might as well, like, know how I feel about what I do at my job and how I feel about the community. I give my all in my work all the time. Nobody ever knew, or I never brought my personal situations at the time to work. When I came to work, it was about work. I worked and I went back to my situation. You know, I never made it about, like, I can't do this today because I'm so depressed. Like, I never.
You're like, nope, I'm leaving that at the door.
Leaving it at the door.
Yeah.
I never brought it to work. And a lot of people usually, I'm the type of person that nobody knows my moves until I do it. And that's why this is kind of difficult for me to tell people that I'm resigning.
Yeah.
Because I typically just do it and not say anything, but I kind of have to tell people.
I'm gonna miss you.
I know.
At the library.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And my last day is September 9th.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I think this podcast will be out after that. So
okay, well.
After the 9th. So, yeah, by the time this podcast is out, you'll be.
Gone.
You'll be gone. But, gone. Man, what gosh, that's bittersweet. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So can you divulge what you're going to be doing next or?
I can say that this won't be the last of me that you all will hear.
Oh, I knew that. I mean, you know.
But at this point, I'm literally just going with the flow at this point. I'm the type of person that likes growth. And I like change. Change is not fun, but I like it. And I need it. And I feel like I've reached my cap, my max at the library. I've thought it through. I've been thinking it through for a while. Talked it through with some very, very close people of mine. Even with my therapist, talked it through. And it just happened. Like after music, it was at Music Fest this year. After I performed, I was like, dang, this is it. Like, that was it. You know, I got to get on the merch stage and I thought to myself, I love performing. I love putting on events and creating platforms for teens or for young adults. So for people who are talented, musically inclined, for artists, I want to do more of that. You know, I want to help a community thrive in that. And I thought to myself, like, I don't want to be 45 still trying to push it and rap and stuff. I don't want to be trying to find my breaking point or my break. Mm-hmm. I don't want to try to find my break at 41. I'm not gonna be that person. So then I thought, like, I'm 31. That's not far from now. I gotta do something different. Like, I have to. So
so you're gonna pour more into your music career? Is that
That is the plan.
Okay.
Is to do more music. It's also the plan to try doing some filmmaking stuff. I'm not sure yet. But I'm, again, like, I'm just going with the flow. I have been looking to move out of Kankakee County.
Oh, don't do that. We need you here, whether you're at the library or not. You know?
Yeah. I feel like it's, I want a new scenery.
Sure.
I really do.
I understand.
Like, I crave growth. Yeah. Crave change. And
well, I know no matter where you go, you'll always have Kankakee County your heart, and you'll still display that badge proudly, you're from the Kankakee area, you know.
Right. Especially with the police escort to Kankakee.
Yeah. Like, right.
I came to Kankakee just to be born and then went back home. So, like, I, you know, me and Kankakee have a relationship that. It's a mutual thing.
Yes,
I love
absolutely.
Kankakee, and I hope Kankakee loves me. But I know that my story doesn't end here.
Right.
Who would be calling me right now?
Should we have them recorded on the podcast?
It's the future calling.
It's the hey.
I like that. It's the future calling. That was good.
But we haven't even talked barely about Lady G. Just to emphasize on that, you know, you as Lady G performed at Merchant Street Music Fest 2023.
Yes.
On the main stage. Mm-hmm. I was blown away by your performance. You just really brought it. As cliche as that sounds, you literally brought it. Like, you were on stage, and I was so glad. You're a main stage act.
They put you
in the right place this year, I think, just because what really captures me about music artists is their performance of the energy that they put into the performance. And you had that energy. And that's what really blew me. And obviously your music was very good, too. But still, like, for me, energy is a big part of it.
Yes.
You know, if I see an artist perform and maybe their music isn't exactly there yet, if they have the energy, I'm like, they've got it.
Yeah.
They get it.
Yeah.
At least when it comes to performing and everything like that. But I really thought you had the energy and you had the music. You had the combo going at Merchant Street this past year.
I mean, I do my best, to be honest.
Yeah.
I didn't really believe how good my music could have been or probably is. Until I wrote a song called Keep Moving, and it was in the midst of, and this is why my music is so important to me, and it's a reason why I'm hesitant on pursuing music, because that's the thing that I'm able to keep to myself. I've written poetry. I think I want to say maybe 18 years old when I wrote my first poem. And it was to, because I used to have like youth services at my dad's church, and those used to be like hype nights. Hype moments. I loved gospel rap, gospel hip hop. I love Christian music, Christian upbeat. I love pop music, things like that. So I would have nights where I would invite all of my gospel rappers that I knew, and they would come and perform for our kids, and we would have hot dog chips and just enjoy the music and stuff like that. So I didn't think that I could write poetry until there was this guy that came to speak at my parents' church one year. And the type of church that I grew up in, they were very adamant about prophecy and about speaking into somebody's life. So it was this one guy that came and he spoke to me and he said that I have a gift that I didn't know about. And it was writing poems. And I'm like, ugh.
Like, what?
You could have saved that prophecy. Don't nobody want that.
So really. So it you're
I
not
it.
Attracted to that.
I was not. Not the word poems. Like, it's a gift to write poems. I'm like, okay. No, thank you. And then he ended up telling me that I would end up writing like a book or a book of songs, something like that, when it came to poetry and stuff like that. And he was like, you know, it'll be a bestseller. Things like that. And I'm like, poems though? I mean, thank you, but okay, poems. So after that, I forgot about it. Maybe about a year or so later, I had to, I got the opportunity to again have another youth service, and I was the MC for the night. So I'm trying to figure out how to get the kids like hyped up and excited and stuff like that. So I'm like, I can start off with a poem, like just something to get them hyped up. So I started writing, and before I knew it, I had a whole poem. I was like, well, this is good. This is really good. And reading it back and forth, trying to memorize it, and I did it, and they liked it. They loved it. And ever since then, I would write poetry. And this was before I knew I could write music. I would write poetry. Then I started listening to, like, the 90s type of music, like Tupac or Queen Latifah. I love me some Queen Latifah. started listening to her. I would listen to, like, Lauryn Hill. MC Lyte, I didn't know too much about, but when I started music and performing, people would tell me, you sound just like MC Lyte. So I'd be like, I need to figure out what she sounds like and who she is, because I didn't really know. But I wrote my first song, Keep Moving, in the midst of everything that was going on with me making that transition from, you know, being who I was being for someone else to being me. And that song was to encourage me in all of it. And that wasn't the only song I've written. I've written a lot of music in that time. I heard a beat one time, and I loved listening to instrumentals. That's how I wrote my poetry, was just listening to instrumentals. Then it got to the point where I started putting it with the beat. I'm like, oh, this could be spoken word to music, just spoken word to a beat.
And so was this around the time that your marriage had ended or was ending, and was this before that?
This was before. Me writing poems to the beat was before.
Okay.
Me creating Keep Moving was around the time
that
I was going through all of that with my marriage and all of that. So the writing poetry to beats, I didn't think that I could rap at the time. So did that, laid it down to some, and it would be like slow instrumentals, something you would listen to go to sleep.
Sure.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I get you.
To kind of like build that momentum of listen to my words. Did that, long story short, ended up putting words and writing two beats, like intentionally now, putting my words to beats and creating a flow with it. I remember my very first rap I ever did and laid was for my kids. Like, I let him hear it, and he was like, yo, you can spit. I was like, really? He was like, yeah. He was like, once you figure out your flow and things like that, he was like, you can spit. I said, thanks, I think.
And if your own kid says that, it's legit. Because usually the kids, like, their parent does some type of performing or songwriting, and they're, like, so embarrassed by it. They're like, oh, my gosh, please don't do that again.
Yeah.
You know, please don't sing that song ever again.
You're embarrassing me.
Yeah, you're embarrassing me. Yeah, but the fact that your kid was like.
It was my kid's dad.
Oh, okay.
My kid's dad.
But
they do enjoy Lady G.
Okay.
Every time they get in the car, they're like, can we listen to Lady G? Okay, we can listen to it. Sometimes I'm like, well, is this because I'm their mom or is this? But my kids are literally like my biggest fan. They know my word. They know all my words. It's my music that I let them hear. There's a couple songs that I'm making now. It's like, you can't listen to that one.
Yeah, that's not kid friendly.
No, you cannot. And one of my goals also was to write music that my kids can repeat. Mm. Like, they don't have to have bleeps in the song, or I'm like, don't say that, that's a bad word. So I tried to keep my music clean at one point, but then it got to a point where I felt like I was still not being fully me. Not saying I just want to cuss in all my music and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I did want to be able to just be creatively myself, fully. So I ended up making music. I made Keep Moving, did the music video at my guy Smitty's cookout they had 3 years ago, I think it was. Maybe 3 or 4 years ago. In August. And I released the preview to that, and it went crazy. I didn't expect it at all. The preview went crazy. Then when the video was released, it blew up. And then I got calls from a lot of people. Can you do Keep Moving? That is not the only song I have, y'all. No, I'm tired of Keep Moving. I've been moving.
Yeah, the song's called Keep Moving, so I've moved on from that song. Yeah.
Right, but I understood it. You know what I'm saying? So I didn't have an issue. I got up there with the same energy every time, performed it in churches, performed it at fests, performed it at like gatherings and stuff like that. So I really did enjoy the fact that Kankakee came, you know, they agreed with my sense of music when it came to Keep Moving. So yeah, Lady G kind of started from that, from Keep Moving.
That's awesome.
I went through a lot of like stage names too.
Yeah. Yeah. And what made you land on Lady G?
I went through like Natural Expressions. I went through PK, which is Preacher's Kid. I went through.
I like PK.
Yeah, it was
that's
PK.
Good. That's a good one.
And it was a few other ones that I can't think. And they were very, very like, they were pretty cool names.
Yeah.
But I ended up doing a piece. And I've always told myself that I was great. I've always believed that I was great and destined to be greater. So the G in Lady G stands for great. So instead of being called Lady Great, I said, I'm a lady. I'm a woman of passion. And I'm great. So Lady Great. But I didn't want people to know that they were calling me Lady Great. So I shortened it to Lady G. So a lot of people think it's for my last name, Greer.
Yes.
When it's not.
Okay.
It's Lady Great.
It just happens to be a coincidence.
It does. Yeah. So I have in one song that I just recently wrote that a lot of people call me Lady G and don't even know that they're calling me Great.
Yeah.
So
that's joke's on you.
Every time you say it,
yeah,
you're calling me Great. So don't not say it now.
Even if they're saying, you know, Lady G, I don't like you. Great. You just say, oh, you just Lady call Great. Me Great.
Thank
oh,
you.
Thanks.
Thank you. And I love you. Thanks for that.
I love that. So, yeah, the next chapter for you, it sounds exciting. You know, I mean.
Scary.
And scary. But yes. That's how all chapters start.
Yeah. Yeah.
New chapters. Beginning of new chapters.
New books, because this is going to be completely different, especially with me talking about moving and things like that. And then what's great about it is as well that me and my parents are working on building a new relationship. So things that happen, you know, back then or how they handle situations, like I've heard my mom tell me, like, I was young. I didn't understand. I didn't know. I handled some things wrong. I wasn't always right. And me, with the type of parents that I had, I didn't know or ever expect to hear that, you know, especially parents that, you know, being raised in the 90s and early 2000s, parents like are stern, like, I did what I did because I had to. Like, you learned from it, didn't you? Thanks to me, you are who you are. Like, I expected to hear.
Oh, you mean I have anxiety problems? Right,
exactly. I didn't even know I was going through abuse. I didn't, like, it's a lot, you know? Didn't know my mental health was at stake. Didn't know. But to hear that, like, from my mom was like, wow. You know? And I respect it. I respect it. And it was, as a teenager going through hormones, everything that I did wasn't right. Even as a young adult.
Yes. And so with your father, is that...
It's working. It's coming together. It's getting there. It's going to get there, but it's getting there. I'm taking it a day at a time. Again, like when it comes to my music, I'm telling who I am in my music. I'm the most vulnerable in my music. So I'm very hesitant on sharing it. I let Brian and Matt hear my song back when Pathfinder was in the old spot. And I was like, I'm trying to figure out if I want to do a music video for this song. It was a new song. And I let them hear it. And they were like, that's you? I said, why? First of all, right, why? Because if it's good, yes. If it's not, no, it's not me. And they were like, this is great. I said, y'all just trying to pick me up and stroke my ego. And it was like, no, this is really good. I said, would y'all tell me if it was bad? Or would you just be like, okay, that's decent?
Yeah.
Like, they said they would tell me. And they said it was good. So they are looking forward to doing at least a music video for me. I have not gotten back to them on it. And this was maybe a year and a half ago now. But I'm very, very careful in what I share when it comes to my music. And now I'm starting to make music also for the community. For, you know, I was thinking about becoming a inspirational LGBTQ artist, but I don't want to label myself. So when people ask me, well, what genre of music do you do? I just do music.
Yeah. You want to be accessible to everyone. Mm-hmm. You don't, because I get that. Mm-hmm. Like, I can see both sides to that.
A lot of people say it's necessary to have a target audience. My target audience is just someone that needs inspiration. That's my target audience. So I used to always say, if I have just one person that tells me at the end of each performance that I do, you helped me, you changed my life, your music did this, whatever, I'm good. I don't need a million. I don't need 1,000. Just need one.
Yep.
That's all.
Yeah. One. And that one will tell someone else and
right.
so on and so forth. And I've always felt that, you know, if you follow your passion, you'll get to where you need to be or want to be. So, and it sounds like that's what you're doing.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. And so. I'm trying to find it in the midst of me transitioning from the library to be continued. I'm trying to find it in the midst of it. And I want to find it, especially for my kids. I want to find it because they watch very closely everything I do, very closely. And it matters to me what they think about me. And they are the only people that I care about what they think. They're the only ones because they care what I think. So, you know, I'm doing my best. Again, it's scary. It's scary like, you know what?
Yeah.
But I'm doing my best.
Well, you know, everyone here at Kankakee Podcast and Pathfinder is behind you 100%. So
I respect that. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Definitely
going to miss you at the Kankakee Public Library, though, in the Youth Services Department.
Yeah. You know? It's going to be different. It's going to be something to get used to. But I feel like I've done a lot of things there. I am still helping with the trunk or treat because that is something that I definitely started. And I started.
You started
for my
a lot
kids.
Of things.
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
I started that for my kids because I wanted a safe environment for them to be able to go trunk or treating where they can still feel like they can be a part of it. Or trick-or-treating, but it's trunk-or-treating.
Right,
But they wanted to go trick-or-treating, and I don't really like going in neighborhoods. I don't. So I'm like, let's do it here at the library. And we did it. I think we started in 2019.
Yes.
We started in 2019.
You got a parking lot?
Yeah.
As well, utilize
it. So, yeah, that's one of the things that I've am proud of in starting. Pretty Tough was another one. Kickball, Corner Jams.
Man.
Yeah. I know.
Well, I'm excited to see the future, of course, for you. And do you have, is Lady G, is your music on any platforms yet or no? And any streaming platforms?
I have music on SoundCloud.
Oh, okay.
Nothing else, though. But I am going to work on that.
Yes, you have to.
I am. I need to stop being selfish. And start being selfish and sharing a little bit of me.
Yeah.
But I'm going to work on that. I am.
So where can people find you then in the meantime?
I am deleting my Facebook probably early September. So by the time this come out, it might be gone. So I would say Instagram, Lady_G_Flows is my Instagram name. And I am going to start putting more music on my YouTube channel. And if you ever want to hear anything from me as far as my music, it'll more likely be under Lady G on all streaming platforms. So that'll be very, very soon. Hopefully by the time this come out, it'll be out. So I'm going to say you can find me on all streaming platforms under Lady G.
Okay. I certainly hope so.
Yeah.
I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
Anything else that you want people to know about Celia, Lady G, any of it? I mean, I know we could go
on. Don't forget the flutist.
The flutist. Yeah. Yep.
I did play the flute. That's like a blur. Jeez. The most that I would say is like what I tell my Pretty Tough girls. Always make sure that you are your biggest encourager. You are your biggest inspiration. And what we had our last Pretty Tough session this past Tuesday with me. This past Tuesday. So we got a chance to say our mantra one last time, which is I can, I will, I am. And I have them fill out the rest of what you can do, what you will do, and who you are. And I tell them, don't ever let anybody fill in those blanks but you. So in spite of everything that I've gone through in my childhood, my young adult years, and my marriage and my years at the library, it made me who I am. I never let a situation break me. I try to find a message in the midst of everything. And that sounds very cliche.
It's true, though.
But it's true. It's very true. Once you take a step back from the situation, reassess it, and think about how you affected it or how you can affect others and how you respond in that situation, you know, just be courageous, be bold, unapologetically be you. That's all. That's all.
Great advice. Does Luke have any questions? That's what I'm curious about, too.
Luke?
No, I'm just like the one-liner guy.
You just pop in and out.
I love it. I mean, that's I will say that's one of the many favorite things I have since Kankakee Podcast has been purchased by Pathfinder is that, you know, there's always an engineer running the episode. So whether it's Luke or Matt, and I have one of them chiming in. It's one of my favorite.
Matt would have
had
a lot of questions.
Yeah, I think Matt probably would have had some more questions.
Keeps
for
the conversations flowing.
And Luke is very good at one-liners. Yeah,
I heard him. Like, Luke, you're very good at what you're doing. You're very good.
Thank you.
I do want to thank Brian too.
Yes,
Brian Prairie and Matt Olszewski. Matt O, little Matt. I do want to thank them because whenever I need them and I call them, they come running. Like, they don't hesitate. And that is mutual. And I do want Brian to know that it's mutual, that if he ever needed me, I will come running.
Yeah. Anytime I've brought your name up to Brian, he's always said nothing but good things.
Yeah.
So,
same. I have nothing but good things to say about him. He's very, very talented. And we all have the same, like, we work very well together. Mm-hmm. Very well. And what's crazy is when I first started working with him, I was like, we should start a podcast.
There you go.
We should start a podcast. Well, not start, but I wanted to start a podcast with people from the community, LGBTQ community, just have conversations and bring different ones on. But you can still do that, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, you can still do that, too, because obviously, you know, Pathfinder has a podcast division, and I'm a part of that, so I'll help you with that. If you ever...
Don't do that, Jake. I'll blow your phone up. Don't do that.
That's what they hired me for.
I would love to do that, though.
Ooh, I got a question for you.
What's that?
Top five.
Top five...
musical artists, like hip-hop specifically. Okay. And that's an unfair question. I know that.
I think he totally got you.
Yeah,
on that one.
Yeah, he did.
That's a good one.
Only because I tried not to commit to favorites, but I have to put Queen Latifah as my number one. I'm gonna start backwards. I'm starting number one. Queen Latifah will be number one. I love me some Queen Latifah, and I'm still to this day learning her music.
Not enough people, I feel like, have given her credit.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. She's a different type of woman too.
Oh yeah,
she's very versatile. She's a great actress, a great inspirational motivator, and a great artist. So Queen Latifah is my number one. My number two would probably be MC Light, only because people keep saying, "Well, you sound like her." So I've listened to her music, I've learned her music, and I kind of favor her a little bit. Just a tad bit, not a lot. My number three would be Tupac. He was very, very inspirational with his music. And it was more of poetry than anything with his music. And then my number four, who would be my number four? I like J. Cole a lot. I love J. Cole because of his message and his songs. J. Cole would be my number four. Number five would be Lady G. I like her music a lot. She inspires me. A lot. I listen to her music. I study her music more than anybody. So I probably cannot tell you any of these new artists that are out because I strictly listen to Lady G and pop music with my kids. Like,
I'm
going
to check out this Lady G.
I would strongly advise Luke and you and everyone else, check out Lady G. She's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
You went through that pretty well.
Did
actually, I? Yeah. I'm impressed.
I am too.
I think it would have taken me a lot longer.
I'm surprised it didn't take me that long.
Yeah, no, you did pretty well. Yeah. You know, good question, Luke.
That was a great question. One-liner. Very great.
Thank you.
All right, Celia, this has been awesome.
Yes.
Thank you so much again for everything.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
This river carries on.